Please be seated. We're only 3 Sundays away from Advent and the Christmas story. And as I told you last week, we're beginning a short 3 Sunday series, worship series on the Old Testament. Today, the Old Testament history or hoax. Next Sunday, the Old Testament texts of terror. And the 3rd Sunday, the Old Testament, a love story. The first difficulty you run up against when offering a worship series on the Old Testament is, what do you call it? Some people would say, don't call it a series on the Old Testament. Others of you might think that Old Testament is a relatively easy and accurate title for the series. But here's where the difficulty comes in. Some people will say that the first testament of the Bible should not be called old, because to call it old is to give it less honor, less respect, less relevance than what you're going to call the New Testament. You will hear it said that to call the First Testament the Old Testament is to disrespect the Jewish religion. Some people will tell you that the first books of our Bible should be called the Hebrew Bible. Some say the Hebrew Scriptures. And there is certainly a case to be made for all of those suggestions. But I want to offer you an explanation that helped me come to terms with what I would call those first books of the Bible. Amy Jill Levine has written an essay about the Old Testament and the Hebrew Bible, and she suggests that, yes, she can see why to call Judaism's Bible the Old Testament might seem as though the Old Testament is outdated or it's incomplete or it needs more. But then she holds up several important distinctions between what Christians call the Old Testament and the actual Hebrew Bible. One of the distinctions she holds up is that our Old Testament, and especially the Orthodox or Catholic Old Testament, includes books and numbers them differently and compiles them differently than they are collected in the Hebrew Bible. Another thing that she holds up is that our Old Testament, for those of you who are familiar with it, ends with the book of Malachi. That's done on purpose, because in Malachi we see a prediction of Elijah's return, which talks about the day of the Lord. In our Christian Old Testament, the scriptures point towards Christ. The day of the Lord, the return of the Lord, they point towards Christ. In the Hebrew Bible, the prophets are actually sandwiched in the middle, and the emphasis of the Hebrew Bible is always on Exodus, always on going up, always on going out, always on liberation from Egypt and the faithfulness of God. So they are not exactly the same. And so we arrived at Old Testament. I think you'll understand that a little more as I go along. Ultimately, what I think is most important, and what we're going to try to model over the next 3 weeks, is what you say after you say Old Testament. With what respect, with what reverence, with what knowledge and faith do you tell the story? So with that, I invite you to look at your worship bulletins. Your worship bulletins have an Old Testament timeline. You can open them up and then you can sort of follow them along. I thought this was important to share with you this morning because I thought some of you might do what I do. When I read the Bible stories, I tend to think of them in isolation from everything else. For me, the stories that are happening in my Bible are happening totally by themselves. There's nothing else in the world. When I read about Adam and Eve, there are no other humans in the world. When I read about Noah and the flood, there are no other humans in the world. And I think it's important to be reminded that these stories happen within the context of a greater whole. So if you look at your timeline, here are some things that you'll see. And these are best guesses. Well, and they might not even be the best people's best guesses, but here we go. Around 8,000 BCE, that's before the Common Era, you will see the story of Noah and the flood. And moving forward, around 2,000 BCE, we have the stories of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph. At 1750 BC, some of you might remember this from your high school education or your early world history classes, Hammurabi's Code, which was the original code of civic laws. It was very much an eye for an eye kind of legal code. 300 years later, and I won't even get into that this morning, 300 years later, we see that Moses receives the law from God. About the time that the Israelites moved into the promised land, King Tut sat on the throne of Egypt. If you've seen that traveling exhibition, then just imagine King David with that finery, that gold, and all the gems of Tut that decorated Tut and his tomb. Imagine that on King David. Golden thrones, jeweled couches. The first Olympic Games were held in 770 BCE, and then sometime during the 5th century BCE, 400 years before Julius Caesar was assassinated and more than 400 years before Jesus was born, this story that we heard Tom read today from 2 Kings took place. And for those of you who listened, you might think that that seems like an odd story to begin this Old Testament series with all the possibilities, with all the great big stories, with the stories of the patriarchs and the Garden of Eden and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, and some of you maybe even wanted us to start with sort of a prophetic harangue and all the ways we need to get back on the straight and narrow, but no, we chose this little story from 2 Kings. And we chose it because it is a story about the story. In 2 Kings, we find that King Josiah has called for the rebuilding of the temple. And in this particular story, Josiah has sent his secretary to the temple with some instructions about how to pay all the workers that were working on the temple. But what Shaphan comes back to the king with is much more than a message, "I did what you told me." Shaphan comes back to the king and says, "The priest Hilkiah has given me a book." And Shaphan then read it aloud to the king. Let me draw that out just a little bit. Hundreds of years before the birth of Jesus, all of the stories of the first five books of the Bible were completely lost. Genesis, Exodus, the stories we know, completely lost, because not all of the kings of Judah and Israel were faithful. Many of them were not. And at some point, a king or several kings had all the sacred scrolls collected and then burned. They were gone for generations. No stories of Adam and Eve, no stories of Noah and the Great Flood, no stories of the Exodus or the parting of the Red Sea. And they might have been lost forever, except that it was commonplace in the ancient Near East to hide religious scrolls in the walls when constructing temples. So when King Josiah started renovating the temple around 460 BCE, one of his workers found the Torah scroll hidden in a wall. And Josiah wept for its recovery. And again, the people began to share the story. To help us talk about this story this morning, I'm going to share another story with you. Let me tell you the story of Carolyn Manasevitz. This is the way I heard her story. On August 10th, 1942, 15,000 Jews, all the Jews in Kremenets, Ukraine, were forced onto trucks and taken to an open field, forced to dig deep trenches, and then were shot by their Ukrainian neighbors who were collaborating with the Nazis. Carolyn knew the names of 37 of them. Nearly 40 of those who were murdered on that day were her family, her father's 11 brothers and sisters, their husbands and wives, their children, her cousins. First time I heard Carolyn's story, I believed it. I did not hold it up to attest the facts. I did not hold it up to a truth test. I believed it. I didn't look on the internet. I didn't consult an encyclopedia. I didn't check to see if her dates were right. I didn't check to see how many of the inhabitants of Kremenetz were Jewish or how many perished in 1942. The first time I heard Carolyn's story, it moved me, and I believed it. How unfair it is to hold our faith stories, particularly our Old Testament stories, up to that narrow, narrow test of, is it history? Can I prove it? Can I find it? Can I detail it? And if not, it's a hoax. What an unfair test to hold our faith stories up to. Author Constant Cherry wrote, "There is a fine line between story and history. And in some languages," she points out, "like German and French, there is only one word for both." This is very important. At no time, she said, at no time in the history of our faith tradition was the narrator's purpose to give a straightforward account that would satisfy our later historical curiosity. Their intent in writing these stories was to glorify the God whose saving presence was marvelously manifested in an unforgettable historical experience. When we hear stories that move us, that change us, we can't hold them up to a simple truth test. But we have to decide if, in their totality, if they are true. We have to tell stories or they die. Let me tell you another piece of Carolyn's story. On January 2nd, 1992, 50 years after the massacre in Kremenetz, Carolyn's oldest son boarded a plane to live in Berlin with a girl whose father had been a Nazi. Long before, Carolyn had vowed never to set foot on German soil. That day when her son told her that he was moving to Berlin and that there would be a wedding in the spring, she could hardly take in the news. She found herself in her studio struggling to deal with her pain, and she began painting, and her painting turned into the picture of an empty swing and what she understood her painting to be. Was a cry for all of those who died in the Shoah, in the Holocaust, all of those who would never be here to swing, to walk, to play. She finished her painting, and then she began looking for other survivors of the Holocaust. We have to tell those stories. We have to tell the stories, or like August says in The Secret Life of Bees, we have to tell our stories. It's good for us to hear our stories again. Stories have to be told, or they die. And when they die, we can't remember who we are or why we're here. Carolyn's story began to change that day when she heard her son's love story and understood what it meant for her life. That's the thing about falling in love. And I mean really falling in love, not like those crazy kind of Lifetime Movie Network shows where it's all about Stranger in My Bed and stuff. But like real love, when you fall in real love, what's the first thing you do? You begin to share your stories. And time passes without your even noticing it. And if it is real love, then your story and your story becomes our story. And that's what the Old Testament is. The Hebrew storytellers told the story of God. And as they told the stories, they found themselves falling in love with God. And God told God's story back to them. And then it became our story, the story of God and the people God loves, and the story of the people and the God they love. From these stories, which are neither history nor hoax, we begin to understand the mystery of God, the sacred spirituality of God. And as we hear these stories of other people's love story with God, it becomes our story too. Yesterday, I think those of you who were here working on the buildings probably shared some stories. Some of them were possibly true. Some of them changed just during the course of the day. But they will be carried and they will be understood as gifts. Gifts of friendship and fellowship and the growing story of MCC Austin and this congregation. And that's what we do every time we gather together. We share the story. As we understand it, the story of God's people and the story of God, and it becomes our story. Let me tell you the rest of Carolyn's story. Shortly after her first art exhibit in Austin in 1995, as she continued to paint, she was invited to exhibit her paintings. Shortly after an exhibit that she had in Austin in 1995 at Austin Presbyterian Seminary, the dean called Carolyn and informed her that one of his seminary students was interested in meeting her. He was a German from Nuremberg. He said that his parents refused to talk to him about the war, refused to tell him their story. And the dean asked if Carolyn would meet the young man. She said she reluctantly agreed, and shortly after he traveled to Colorado, and he entered her studio, and she asked him why he had come. He said, "I was hoping for some sort of reconciliation." Without hesitating and without thinking, she said, "Not in my lifetime." And she began to cry. And he continued to stand there, and she continued to cry. And she said, "I finally understood that it took much more courage for him to come to my door than it took for me to open it. And I understood the reconciliation needs to be right here, right now, in this room, between the two of us." Carolyn Manasvovitz is the reason that I became a Christian pastor. After exhibiting her art, she was invited to teach at Austin Seminary. And in 2005, I ended up in her class, Spirituality and the Holocaust. As we ended that class, we all had to turn in a paper explaining how that class had changed something for us, and I want to share with you just a little bit of the paper that I turned in. Had Candace Gingrich not already taken the title of accidental activist, I would have claimed it for myself. When I entered Austin Seminary, I had no idea of what lay in store. I was a relatively closeted lesbian living in suburban obscurity with my partner and children. Then I had a life-changing experience thanks to a seminary class called Spirituality in the Holocaust. As often happens to people when confronted by the horrors of the Holocaust, I began to ask myself what I would have done if I had been in Germany during Hitler's rule. And I wanted to say that I would have stood up bravely and defied Hitler and defended the Jews despite personal cost. But I couldn't say that with integrity, because the truth was that I was not even standing up for myself and my partner and my family because of my fear of the costs. And the costs were relatively small compared to the cost of defying Hitler. I decided to come out, to live with full integrity, and to pursue ordination. Here's what I want you to know today. My story would never have happened without Carolyn's story. Her story changed my life. And our Christian story, our Christmas and Easter story, would never have happened without the stories of the Old Testament. It is not less than. It is not incomplete. It is glorious, life-changing story. And as we continue to hear the story, and as we continue to share the story, we will find that the story of God is our story. Amen.